Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daniel Treisman, who's a professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a leading specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia, a recipient of the fellowships from the John Simon Guggenheim Foundation and the German Marshall Fund of the United States. He's the author of two previous books on Russia, and his latest is Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Treisman.
Good to be with you.
And it does seem that with the opening ceremonies of the Sochi Olympics, there was a deficit of Western leaders on display, largely only Holland and Italy, but very much present, of course, was China's leader and Japan's leader. So are we to get any implications out of that, that Russia's moving towards the East as its relations with the West sour?
I would say rather that the West seems to be moving away from Russia. It's not entirely clear what the reason for so many no-shows was. They've given various reasons, the Western presidents and prime ministers who chose not to come, partly about gay rights, partly about Edward Snowden and various other issues. But I think it's really been overplayed a little bit in the West. It's not something that the Russians are terribly concerned about.
Well, they are in, as we speak, in negotiations, and they've been going on for decades, between Japan and China, Japan and Russia over these islands in the north of Japan that are disputed, and this dispute has gone on for so long that it's held up the official signing of a of the end of World War II between Russia and Japan, which in itself is pretty extraordinary. Now, there's some rumors that they may be close to a deal.
I haven't heard those rumors. Anything's possible, but I'd be quite surprised, because it's a matter of national pride on both sides, and it's a matter of giving up territory. It's very difficult for any leader of any country to give up territory to another country for purely symbolic reasons, although these islands are extremely insignificant in terms of the actual land itself. So anything's possible, but I haven't heard those rumors, and I think those negotiations will continue, but I wouldn't expect a breakthrough anytime soon.
Well, then, what about some kind of a breakthrough or deal with China, since the Chinese leader showed up and Chinese warships are visiting on the Black Sea? And I mean, remember from the going back to Nixon, the whole point of the Nixon's opening with China was to triangulate so that the U.S. was in the catbird seat, able to play Russia off against China. Is there a possibility of China and Russia being able to play America off against it?
I don't think strategically. I don't think in terms of military issues or geopolitical issues, but in terms of trade and economic development, there are huge shared interests between Russia and China. Unfortunately, there are also disagreements over just what bargain should be struck between them. So there has been some progress. There's some oil exported to China, and there have been deals in the work for gas, which may have got a little bit closer, but the negotiations have been very difficult because China obviously would like a low price for gas and Russia would like a higher price, and the gas industry has been really up in the air the last few years with new developments, shale gas, liquefied natural gas, and also China trying to play off Russia against the various Central Asian countries that also have gas. So it's a complicated negotiation that seems to move at a snail's pace, but there is this shared interest. And meanwhile, Russia has been importing more and more consumer goods from China, so the trade is actually increasing on that side.
Well, would there be, though, any racism in terms of Russia vis-a-vis China? I mean, we were talking earlier with Nina Khrushcheva about the racist tweet from the Russian athlete who lit the Olympic torch, who also is a member of the upper house of the Duma. And we know, and I know from my time in Russia, you know, the word Chornia, which is the N-word, is used all the time against anybody, you know, Chechens, anybody that's dark-skinned. Russians appear to be pretty racist. Are they equally racist towards China and the East?
There are various attitudes towards China, but there's certainly been a lot of sort of exaggerated fear of an influx of Chinese settlers who could take over the Russian Far East. I think that has really calmed down in the Far East itself because people have seen how things are going, and basically the Chinese are not interested in moving into that area. They want to trade. So I think there's people in the Far East, from what I'm told, are actually fairly calm about this, but you do get nationalist hysterics in places like Moscow, where some people seek to score points or build political followings on the basis of dramatizing this Chinese threat, just as some people try to build political followings by exaggerating or dramatizing or completely making up a threat from the Caucasian immigrants coming from the south.
Again, I'm speaking with Daniel Treisman, who's a professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a leading specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia, a recipient of fellowships from the John Simon Guggenheim Foundation and the German Marshall Fund of the United States. He's the author of two previous books on Russia, and the latest of which is Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. So what was your sense of the opening displays? We sort of got a bit of the gossip in the from Nina about Putin's girlfriend, and of course the racist tweeter who lit the torch, etc. And you know, apparently Putin has, to some extent, certainly amongst the intelligentsia in Russia, become the butt of the joke, starting with his botched plastic surgery, which you know has cost him a lot of, I think. I think when you become a joke, it shows that your power is diminishing. But you know, they're the minority, aren't they? The people that oppose Putin.
Yes, they are the minority. Well, they are the minority. First of all, Putin is becoming gradually less popular, and this is a trend that will continue. But I have to say, the opening ceremonies are viewed by many in Russia, even many in the U.S., as being really quite successful and dramatic. And I have to express a little bit of just amazement at the coverage in the Western press of the whole Sochi affair. I don't know what the newspapers are going to write about when there's no longer Sochi to make fun of and denigrate. To take just one example, New York Times the other day, a great, incredible scoop of investigative reporting, they discovered that there are stray dogs in the south of Russia and that they're being put down in the pounds. Now, far be it from me to say anything insensitive about stray dogs. My daughters will kill me. But front page news for the New York Times that there are stray dogs in Russia, I would like to know of any other country in the world where the existence of stray dogs would be front page news for the New York Times. So I think it's really got to the point of being a little bit ridiculous when every blocked up toilet is reported with shock and horror in the Western press. And I think gradually that's going to settle down as the games take place. Now, there are serious issues that should be reported and that have been reported about the possible threat of terrorism, about the facilities perhaps not being completely ready, and about the uncertainty and the corruption that went into building the facilities. But that said, I think now perhaps we should focus on the games themselves.
Well, I agree with you, by the way, that the coverage has been rather petty and petulant, and that, you know, the talking about the brackish water in the bathtub and whether or not there are surveillance cameras when you're taking a shower, etc. You know, the impression you get is that I guess this reinforces a lot of feelings that Russians have towards the West, that the Westerners are just spoiled sort of petty and privileged, as opposed, you know, I mean, this is, I just don't think it's very helpful to rain on the parade, do you?
Well, it's just the extent of it that I find a little bit striking, the herd mentality. Really, all the newspapers feel that every day they have to have another embarrassing story about Sochi. So it makes you wonder, where is this coming from? Why is there this sort of consensus that we have to report all those things much more than similar things are reported in other countries that host this kind of event? But yes, I think it does, for some Russians, give the impression that the West is not completely impartial when it looks around the world. On the other hand, of course, many Russians are quite conscious of the defects in administration and the incompetence of many public officials and the corruption that went into the Sochi Games. So it's not as though these issues are not things they take seriously.
And how do you think the Russians feel about the Games themselves? Do they expect to win a lot of medals? Because so far it doesn't look like they are.
Right. I've seen... So far it looks like a lot of countries have been winning medals. The coverage I saw before the Games was saying, you know, it was expected that the U.S., the Canadians, Norway would win a lot of medals, Russia maybe fourth or fifth. So far it's been quite spread out. There's been an Austrian medal, a gold medal, I think, a Slovak gold medal. So we'll see. But, you know, I think Russians will be upset if they don't win a respectable number of medals, but I don't think anybody expects them to come first.
So in terms of the criticism over the 50 billion plus that these games cost, and the former Deputy Prime Minister Nemtsov said that at least half or more was stolen, my understanding is... I spoke with a specialist the other day about this, that this is actually it doesn't matter so much in these terms of these mega projects where the money goes. It's all based on trickle-down economics, that what Putin has done is he has a deal with the oligarchs, which is, you know, I'll protect you from the Russian people who despise you, but you've got to play within certain rules. And we know that he jailed Khodorkovsky for breaking those rules. And that what in effect Russia has is the worst of both worlds, the worst of capitalism with crony corrupt capitalism and the worst of communism with these big subsidized state industries that the oligarchs have to buy from on a very non-competitive basis. So is that your understanding of how the economy works? So it doesn't matter how much money you spend, it's just one way to keep, you know, the money trickling down.
Well, yeah, those problems are real, and all the major state enterprises, state companies like Gazprom, Rosneft, were required to put very large investments into the Sochi preparations, and those aren't really things that a gas company or an oil company should be focusing on. So that has been a big part of it, and of course it's very likely that a lot of money was corruptly misdirected along the way. The private oligarchs have also been included, and some of them have run into trouble, have been attacked. There's one set of oligarchs who actually were close to Medvedev, the prime minister, and because of sparring, I would say, between Putin's people and Medvedev's people, those oligarchs ended up in the front line, and one has been investigated for corruption and so on, whereas Putin's friends are not necessarily investigated for such things. So it's a fairly dismal story how the business of this gets played out, and certainly $51 billion is a huge amount for an event like this. In general, we don't expect events like this to have a very strong trickle-down effect on the economy, certainly not sufficient to break even, to pay off that investment. But Yeah, it's not likely to have a huge economic impact. It is corrupt, but at the same time, building those facilities was genuinely difficult and costly, which gets to the point that perhaps Sochi, being subtropical, wasn't the obvious place to stage a Winter Olympics.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Daniel Treisman, and I guess we'll find out whether or not this Putin's popularity goes up or down, if that was indeed his hope with this game. But it does seem there are two audiences. The Russian audience is enjoying it, and the Western audience is being kind of snide and churlish.
Well, a little bit, but maybe that'll pass as we get into watching these incredible athletes perform.
Well, I thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Daniel Treisman, who's a professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a leading specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia, a recipient of fellowships from the John Simon Guggenheim Foundation and the German Marshall Fund of the United States. He's the author of two previous books on Russia, the latest of which is Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. We're going to take a brief station break and be back looking at how climate change has impacted 10 of the last 19 cities that have hosted the Winter Games that are running out of snow.